Jason Courtemanche, director of the Connecticut Writing Project, recently published an article about education in UConn magazine. Courtemanche stopped into WHOS for an interview about education. I'm Katie Lazouk for WHOS News. Here's the interview. I'm joined in the studio today by Jason Courtemanche, director of the Connecticut Writing Project, and he recently published an article about education in UConn magazine. So can you tell me a little bit about your work with the Connecticut Writing Project?
Well, we do teacher professional development. So we run a summer institute for teachers to do advanced training. It's a graduate coursework in English, mostly in composition, teaching teachers how to teach writing. And I do a lot of work at the university with pre-service teachers. I advise the dual degree students in English and education. They have an education advisor, and then they have a CLAS advisor. I'm the CLAS advisor.
And you mentioned in your article that you do some outreach work. What does that involve?
There's all sorts of outreach work. We run professional development seminars for teachers on Saturdays. We do professional development workshops on in-service days in schools. But then we do a lot of student stuff, too. We publish a magazine of student writing that's been coming out for 23 years. We do a conference for students about every other year and have professional writers come and run workshops for kids, mostly secondary students.
And you've done a lot of work with the UConn Early Experience Program. Do you think the program is equal across all of the schools that do the program and as compared to freshman English year?
The Early College Experience?
Yes.
Well, that's exactly why I've been going out and doing site visits. Recently, the program received national accreditation, which is fantastic. It means those credits can transfer anywhere. But one of the things, I guess, the accrediting agency wanted to see was more effort to do site visits in the public schools to be able to do just that, to verify that the quality of the instruction was comparable. So that's what I guess we're basically finding out now doing these site visits, because we really only just started doing them in large numbers like this. They've been done always, forever.
Yeah, because Connecticut has a quite large education gap. So do you see that at all?
Oh, between like urban schools and suburban schools?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Within the state.
In various ways, I encounter that all the time. I mean, the article that I published recently in UConn magazine is dealing with just that, particularly with Windham Public Schools, which is where I live and where my kids go to school.
Oftentimes, parents are really concerned in elementary school and high school about very large class sizes. But here at UConn, our class sizes are often in the hundreds for introductory classes. What do you think makes the difference between those two? You don't hear a lot of times students complaining about that
at
UConn.
In English, they're not. I mean, freshman English classes are small, so I don't know. I wouldn't defend large classes in any department.
Okay.
And the introductory classes, I mean, I know there are some 1,000-level lectures at UConn, but I think everybody probably like to see those be smaller. It's basically a matter of funding, I think.
Recently, a teacher in Pennsylvania was suspended for her blog post talking about her students were lazy and incompetent. Do you think today students are a little less motivated than in the past?
No. No, I think that's highly unlikely. People have been complaining about students since the classic times, you know.
Yeah. What do you think are the qualities that make a good teacher, and do you think these qualities have changed through the years?
There's some things that I don't think have changed. I think there are a lot more demands on teachers than there used to be. There's much more accountability than there used to be. There's much more rigorous expectations for training and retraining and recertification. Qualities that make a good teacher, liking your students, for one thing. That's big. That's huge. Having some endurance and some sort of personal dynamism, but also really having some really good training, knowing your content, knowing a lot about how to teach, keeping abreast of current research. Those things are all really important.
I also think sometimes passion about your subject really matters.
Oh, absolutely.
Because at least in my experience, I've always really enjoyed classes where I've had teachers who just love what they do, and that always, for me, shines through.
Yep, I would agree. I think you can find examples of teachers who are dynamic and passionate, but aren't necessarily effective, and you can find teachers who know effective pedagogical strategies, but lack all dynamism or passion. I suppose the best teacher is going to have both those things.
What's your opinion on tenure?
On tenure? Tenure is supposed to be about academic freedom, and teachers get a bad rap in the press because the general public seems to think that tenure is about nothing more than job protection, and it's not supposed to be about job protection. It's supposed to be about academic freedom. There's been a lot in the paper lately about reforming tenure, and I think one of my biggest concerns is that if we just eliminate tenure, then school districts, boards of finance, boards of education, in tough economic times like these, are just going to fire all the veteran teachers to save money, regardless of quality. People can say, oh, it'll give us an opportunity to eliminate bad teachers and keep good ones that are younger and newer. In theory, that's true. In practice, I think my fear is the way it will play out is that the expedient thing to do will just be to get rid of the veterans because they cost the most, regardless of whether or not they're talented. And I think that's what everybody in education is really concerned is going to happen.
If you could reform tenure in any way that you desired, how would you go about that?
Well, unfortunately, every reform that exists, every reform idea that exists really is going to cost money to implement. The way tenure is now, tenured teachers can be removed at the university in, as well as in the K-12 system, but there needs to be observation and documentation of it. Freeing up an administrator who's qualified in that content area to have time to do sufficient observations and documentation to remove someone is going to cost money. There's no easy fix. I think the profession would benefit from having more observation and evaluation, but somebody's got to pony up the funds for administrators to be free to do that.
Also in your article, you mention standardized test performance being increasingly used to evaluate teacher performance.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a better way to evaluate teacher performance?
Yeah, I do. I think the problem with using the tests is that it's only one indicator. It's only a fraction of what you do with the students. Something like the CAP test in English looks at a student's ability to respond really briefly in a timed setting to a story. And yet so much of what you, that's such a small fraction of what you actually do with a student and what you actually want a student to do over the course of a year. So that's just insufficient. It's, I suppose, reasonable to have it be one factor, but even then it doesn't fit in some content areas. How do you do that in art? How do you do that in world languages, which my wife teaches? You'd really need something like, well, I think you could look at things like graduation rates. I often think, like, with merit, people talk about merit a lot and whether or not teachers should receive merit tied to test scores. Well, if they did something like that, I think what you'd have to do is look at a whole school, the entire staff, look at not just performance on standardized tests, but things like graduation rates, placement in college, that sort of thing, and have, like, a Board of Ed award merit to the school for the entire population for having succeeded at doing something well, and then that can be distributed equitably among everybody. That way, things like the aides in the classrooms or the quote-unquote non-core teachers outside of English, math, science, social studies still get credit for being valuable parts of an educational program. Guidance counselors, administrators. I mean, really, it takes everybody to do their job well to get kids educated and out of school and into a college.
So do you think CAPT and like the CMTs are good measures of really anything for students?
I think they're narrow measures.
Okay. Do you think they could be expanded?
I don't want to see them expanded.
You want to see them be decreased or eliminated?
Well, you know, part of the original proposal for the CAPT way back when, the end product that we have now, these four responses to prompts in regard to one story, was actually supposed to be initiatory activity. Those four responses were supposed to be taken back to the classroom, workshopped into a final draft, and a whole portfolio was supposed to be presented and assessed. The state basically said, too subjective, too cumbersome, too costly, can't do it. Yeah, you're right. It is costly, but that is going to give a much more accurate measure of what a student can do. Just whipping off four quick things, that's only going to give you so much. Can the kid then take it and workshop it and put some effort into making it better? Probably, and that's probably a better measure of what a student's capable of.
We've talked a lot about increases in funding. Do you think there are any ways to improve school systems without increasing funding?
No. That's probably a pipe dream.
Okay. Well, on that same track, UConn has a lot of tuition increases in the past few years, and now a lot of experts are fearing that college is going to become essentially unaffordable to people who aren't very wealthy. Do you think that can happen here at UConn, and do you think there's anything that can be done to make it more affordable?
It can happen anywhere. Fortunately, UConn still, compared to other state schools and certainly to private schools, is a very affordable school, which is a good thing. I think it's a shame that there's so many schools that cost, you know, $30,000, $40,000 or more a year. That seems preposterous to me. I mean, you've got to receive more funding from state agencies, from the federal government. We spend a lot of money on the military. We spend a lot of money on financial bailouts and automaker bailouts. And comparably, we don't spend a fraction of that kind of money on education. There's no solution without more and better funding. It just really isn't.
All right. Do you have any final thoughts?
I was thinking a little bit about the some of the content of the article, and one of the things that was in an emphasis that came up in the research was the increasing need for training in bilingualism, and that's something that I think is neglected, and that's going to be a big part of some upcoming research I'm going to be doing.
All right, so you do research on bilingual learning?
Well, it looks like I'm going to be doing so. I'm going to be submitting a grant application for some funding to do just that.
What specifically are you interested in?
Well, the article came out of, well, first it came out of an invitation to write an article as either a faculty or an alumni piece, because I'm both. And what I got curious about was my son's school, because my son's school was a blue ribbon school in 2005 and was on the failing list in 2008. And so I wanted to find out what happened. And when I started doing interviews of teachers and administrators and aides in the building and stuff, basically what it came down to was increasing poverty among the student population, increasing bilingualism among the student population, decreased training and professional development in bilingual education for the teachers and among the teachers, and layoffs of teachers. So all of a sudden you had fewer teachers and aides in the classroom, not really trained properly in bilingual or ELL instruction, without the funds for professional development in it, and larger numbers of kids who were bilingual in the classroom and were poor to boot. And that just became a recipe for disaster. So there's a lot of things that are necessary there, but one of the things obviously is some training in bilingual education for even the quote-unquote mainstream classroom teacher.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.